This is Radio Talk from the Radio Academy.
Hello from Maple Street Studios in London. This is Paul Robinson. Welcome to Radio Talk from the Radio Academy. Radio as a medium gives contact, comfort and companionship, but even more so to those who are vulnerable, isolated or in need of practical support in our society. Wavelength is a registered charity whose purpose is to help those who really need that companionship and can be assisted via technology. And today we're going to discuss the role of radio in helping vulnerable people across the UK. I'm joined by Tim Leach, who is the Chief Executive of Wavelength, Ken Scott, who is a homeless mental health worker, and Michael Ferguson from the voluntary sector from the organisation The Passage, a homeless charity. Welcome to all of you. Tim, if I can come to you first of all, tell me more about what Wavelength does.
Hi, Paul. Thank you. We were set up about 75 years ago by the BBC and the Rotary Club. And originally, that was very much around radio. We migrated to TV and were going into computers and tablets now. But radio is really at the core. Digital has brought that on. And we need to make sure that people who are very reliant on that medium for the loneliness and isolation they're experiencing in their life. And that might be somebody who wakes up, who's just been bereaved at 3 o'clock in the morning, is able to switch on the radio and go back to sleep, having that amount of comfort. Or it may be somebody who's very isolated, suffers from poor mental health every now and again, is in hospital, loses quite a bit of their own belongings, but can take a radio with them. It can keep that continuity with the outside. It's not that intrusive. It's a highly supported medium. And it's one of the few things which allows us to almost give a level playing field, because it hasn't got a TV licence. People can get a hold of art, culture, they can listen to music. They also can bond over that. So there's lots and lots of things besides it just being about relieving isolation. It can be starting to get people back into community as well.
And what is it about radio particularly then, do you think, that is so helpful in doing this? I mean, clearly radio is an intimate medium. When you are on the radio, you feel as though that voice is talking directly to you. And I guess it's something you can also listen to while you're doing something else. But is there anything else about radio that makes radio particularly very helpful to the people that you're trying to assist?
I think it's a range of subjects you can actually link into. I think it's a transportability of that as a medium. I now think it's also because you can get it on so many different types of technology. So you can get it on the phone, you can get it on the computer, you can get it over a traditional radio set, analog, digital. And that amount of choice is very, very important. But I believe radio really has learned to engage people through voice without pictures. It allows people's imagination to be engaged. And I think that's very useful when you're in a situation where you haven't had access to anything. A lot of the women's aid centres we work with, for example, the people coming out of those very, very abusive relationships hadn't been allowed to turn on the TV, hadn't had access to anything. And maybe what they had access to was a radio. It was the only thing they had control over in their lives. And to be able to choose the music you want to listen to or the programme that you want to engage with on that one-to-one basis is just so powerful. It can keep you going.
It seems a really simple thing to be allowed to choose the radio station you want to listen to, but you've just made that point that people in these situations are literally denied that very, very basic opportunity.
Yeah, and that's also what happens when people leave the homes. They leave everything. So I'm often sort of cited as a charity which makes people into couch potatoes. We don't do that. Actually, we're quite realistic. The media is a very, very supportive medium for everybody. It's something you can link into, listen to what you want to listen to, and it will take you forward. And it allows that one-to-one relationship to grow. And I think that's what gives you comfort is, you know, we know at this particular time of day we can switch the radio on and we can listen to John Humphreys. We can switch the radio on and listen to yourself on a podcast. You know, that helps a lot of people plan the day and gives them a highlight to work towards and gives them some comfort and contact and companionship.
Let's bring in Ken Scott, who works in Westminster. Ken, how big a problem is this in Westminster?
Homelessness is a massive problem in Westminster. There's far more homeless people in Westminster than any other London borough. I work for a mental health team, and we take referrals and we liaise very closely with homeless provision through day centres, Passage, connections, West London Day Centre. We take referrals from them, amongst others. And it's very important that we're targeting those people that are homeless, specifically street homeless.
How do you make a connection between someone who's homeless, someone that you're working with, and a radio that will help them to start to reconnect to the rest of the world?
Well, if we're working with someone, it won't be straight away the offer of a radio. We'll assess, you know, whether they actually would need it or whether they want it or that. I find that often a lot of the people we're working with are not in receipt of benefits, or indeed a lot of them are NRPF, people no recourse to public funds from abroad for whatever reason. Having taken, you know, got to know them over a matter of time, and the offer of a radio there, perhaps we may have got them into hostel accommodation, or indeed they may be in hospital, but the offer of a radio and what it can bring, it actually forges the relationship between myself and the client. It helps to break down barriers, I suppose, in a simple way.
They start becoming more open with you, and you start to hear more about their issues, and you can then, I guess, also start to help them more.
Hopefully, yeah.
When someone gets a radio and they've been through that process, Ken, what sort of changes have you seen in people from the experience of now being exposed to just, you know, very simple radio programs?
The first time I meet a lot of people we're working with is in a hospital setting. And so I can't say alone that it's the radio that changes them. But the radio in connection with the medication just sees the clients functioning more able. The radio enables them to feel part of what's going on, and it's inclusive. It's not exclusive. And it helps them to feel part of their own recovery.
And presumably also, you know, when you go in and talk to them, they become topics that become enabled because they've heard something. You know, it provides material for a conversation which you can have an engagement about.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about the benefits. Let's talk a bit about Westminster and why Westminster is an area with such a severe homeless problem. Let's bring in Michael Ferguson from The Passage. Why is Westminster the part of the UK with more homeless than anywhere else, Michael?
Well, I work for a charity called The Passage, which is one of the largest day centres in the country. So it provides food, showers, a safe space for people to go to in the daytime if they're street homeless. And we've also got two hostels in Victoria. And there's a number of other hostels in Victoria as well in Westminster. I think it's difficult to say why Westminster's has so many homeless people. Something about the proximity of the transport links, maybe the Houses of Parliament and even the royal family. It seems to attract people from all over the country and indeed all over the world.
So you're working with people who are not just from Westminster, they've come to Westminster, potentially, as you say, from all over the world, from the UK. How do you manage those relationships with those people, and what are you trying to achieve?
Well, the Passage, part of its work will be reconnecting people back to their home areas. And some of those people would maybe be given a radio, but other people that we work with on a more long term who've got a connection to the local area, a connection to Westminster, they're the more the type of client that we work with over the long term. And my specific role at the moment is working with 50 sort of long-term rough sleepers with a local connection to Westminster. So we're not trying to encourage them to go back to another area of the country. We're actually working with them in Westminster into housing, firstly probably into a hostel and then into a flat. And for these people who've had you know, very traumatic lives and have been on the streets for a very long time, a radio is very important in their recovery.
When you're dealing with someone who's on the street, do they come to you or do you find them? How does it work?
Both. So they can either come to the day centre, and there's a number of day centres. I work for The Passage, which is in Victoria. So they can come there and have breakfast, hot food, showers, change of clothes, medical assistance. And then they can also get advice there about housing. There's medical staff there. There's an education, training and employment team there. For those clients who won't come to a day centre, and there are a minority of clients who are sort of very long-term entrenched rough sleepers who don't access day centre provision. There's three outreach teams, in fact, in Westminster who go out nearly every night of the year looking for homeless people, and they can engage with them on the street.
Tim, you're a national charity, and these two guys in many ways are the front end here. They're dealing with people on the street. How do you ensure that you're helping people right across the UK?
We work with lots of different organisations. I mean, that's a part of what we do. We've got a long history of building up those sorts of relationships. It's changed over the years from we were working through things like Rotary Clubs at one stage and then social services. And now we're going back to the voluntary sector. One of the things we used to do was very much one-to-one. Now we've gone back into working for organisations. Our money works better that way. We also are hitting people who most in need. We're hitting people who don't have anything. And I think that's very important. We've got to understand people don't have anything. There's lots of people out there. And we've developed over the last 2 years a set of models to work and make it easier for people to work with us. So we'll pick up a lot of the loose ends of ordering things, paying for things, getting things to people. We also are very keen that we offer opportunities that people can have their own voice. So we're able to allow the issues that they're taking on board and tackling at the, you know, the front end, sort of national coverage. And that's very important to me. So we're making sure the people are really being disenfranchised and cut off from community and not supported, and now getting that support and also got the chance to say what has happened to them. Very, very key. And I think that's all to do with charity actually taking risks on people's behalf. So those things are sort of leading us forward and making us find new connections, new links with small and large national organisations.
How do you fund the radios that you give out to people who need them?
All our funding comes from public donation. We receive no government funding whatsoever. We have some charitable trusts who will support us. I'm hoping that the media industry will come more involved, whether it be film, whether it be radio, whether it be TV. I'm hoping that we'll be able to get that message out across to a wider audience of people that there is real need in this society now. The last 10 years have seen a real switch. The last 5 years, in terms of what's happened with the banking crisis, etc., has really segmented society from what we see in terms of applications coming in. The people who are very, very much in need. And that's going to continue. There's going to be a long basis before that is fixed. But that's a challenge. That's what my sector is particularly good at. We put in a lot more support than either the NHS, I would say, or government in terms of the money we have recourse to. Joseph Rowntree did a study saying that we're far more effective than these bodies actually sorting those problems out and doing the long-term engagement with people, getting them from in between the stools they've fallen into back there as active members of the community.
I think you're a fairly well-kept secret in the radio industry, and I'm hopefully this podcast will just help to start to change that. But are you a well-kept secret in government as well?
We were one of the lead organisations on things like digital switchover and help schemes of television. But government really didn't know we were there. We were involved, but we were set up to actually deliver that sort of process anyway 75 years ago. I think government is also very keen to engage with what it sees as an umbrella body rather than the individuals doing the work and having the experience on the ground. So, yes, we're involved in things like some of the Ofcom committees. We used to be part of the CEG before the present government and chairman thought it was right to close that down. I think that's a little bit short-sighted. We probably need to be engaging within the digital agenda very, very heavily at the moment before the next election. There's going to be lots of people who are excluded, and the digital exclusion I'm quite concerned about. And we need to be thinking smarter and wiser within not only the voluntary sector but also within government. And I think media needs those steers from both sides now.
It's a really good point, actually. I mean, digital is, you know, hailed as being a fantastic thing, but as you say, it does also exclude some people. Ken, I mean, are there people that you've worked with for whom radio doesn't really provide a benefit, or is it a panacea that works pretty much everywhere?
Well, I guess the people that it wouldn't necessarily provide a benefit would be the people that would decline the offer of a radio.
But they might need help. It might be that they could be helped.
They would decline the offer of a radio,
yes.
But they would accept help.
Right.
A lot of the people that I work with, as I stated earlier, have no money, have no resources, and are isolated or away from the family. In that situation, I think the first port of call was if we can get them accommodated. Yeah. If perhaps they're so unwell that perhaps it's thought that believe that medication might help. It's very hard to administer, to give medication when someone's street homeless. So we try to get them accommodated in a hostel or...
And what would the medication do, just to help me understand that?
It would be antipsychotics, usually.
Okay.
Usually antipsychotics, because we work at the acute end of homelessness, mentally ill homelessness. There are on occasions, yeah, when someone is so unwell, that it does require something, antipsychotics. Or in the worst-case scenario, perhaps, you know, they may have to go into hospital.
Right.
Detained under the Mental Health Act.
And if you do identify someone who you think could be helped by a radio, but they say no...
Yeah.
Can you persuade them? And how would you try to persuade them?
I tried to tell them that they could try for a week. If they didn't like it, they didn't use it, they can always give it back. Which leads me on to the point that on a couple of radios that I've given away, given to clients, who then, a few months later, have then managed to get their own accommodation, their own benefits, their own money, their own part-time jobs, and have then handed the radios back to be passed on to someone else that needs them. And I think that's a really nice...
It's a really good use of that radio
nice
set,
gesture.
Isn't it? Yes.
And they come from a point where they have nothing. A few months later, they're in a position where they do have something, but they can give their radio back to be given on again to someone who has nothing.
Michael, do you think that there will always be a need to provide this sort of service, or will there come a day when, you know, we can hopefully help people such that, you know, there's no need for the sort of work that you do?
I think there'll always be a need. Some time ago, there was an idea that homelessness would move upstream, so it would move off the streets and into hostels and or into accommodation anyway. And that has happened to a large extent since the 1990s anyway, when there were far more street homeless people in London, and the government put in a Rough Sleepers initiative to accommodate a large number of those people. But there'll always be a need. There'll always be isolated people, even if they're in accommodation.
And that's not going to change.
I don't see it changing anytime soon. No, I don't. I feel the problem with that system was that a lot of people got just put into hostels and then sort of forgotten about. They're still homeless in a sense, albeit they're not sleeping on the street. I think there's a lot of good work going on with homeless charities and the homeless sector, but I can't see an end to homelessness anytime soon.
And you're in the voluntary sector. What keeps you going?
Me as a person?
Yeah, doing this fantastic work.
I enjoy it, really. I enjoy my job. I find it rewarding. I can't say any more than that, really.
No, that's absolutely fine. I'm just fascinated because, you know, what you're doing is incredibly important, and, you know, we all need to have motivations. I just wanted to understand. Tim, you have a great website full of information, so I think we just ought to talk about your website and give it a plug.
Well, the website is www.wavelength.org.uk. That, at the moment, will be be made into a far more streamlined animal than it is at the moment, so it would be accessible on tablets and also on phones, etc. But it is there in many ways to pass out information about who we work with, what we do, how to apply to us. But also, if people can't apply to us, there are other charities there which can lend a hand and help. So it's a portal for funding. Because, again, this is about, I feel, if we can't help somebody because our remit and our charitable remit, we've still got a responsibility of trying to start and place somebody else.
This has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you very much indeed, Tim Leach, Ken Scott and Michael Ferguson. And more details, as Tim said, on the website. If you would like to go to the Radio Festival, tickets are on sale now. Go to www.radioacademy.org. You can find full details there. This has been Radio Talk from the Radio Academy. Now it's Radio Moments. Here's David Lloyd.
Radio Talk from the Radio Academy. Keep in touch with us at radioacademy.org.
Radio Moments.
Let's start this week with a Kenny Everett sacking. Now, which one was this? It was the driving test comment.
Finally, Mrs. Mary Payton, wife of the Transport Minister, has passed her advanced driver's test first time. She's been driving more than 30 years, but says she was spurred on to take the test by her husband's appointment. That's the news from the third floor, incidentally. Our next one, 11:30.
She only passed because she crammed a fiver in his hand. I know these people. And now, where were we?
Memories of the 18th of July 1970, when the BBC fired Kenny Everett after he suggested the Transport Minister's wife may have bribed her driving test examiner. But as we now know, that might not have been the only reason. Life with talent is never simple, is it? On now to another Commercial Radio 40th, and this time, happy birthday to a station still on air to this day.
These tests are to prepare for the start of independent local radio in the Tyne and Wear areas by the Metropolitan Broadcasting Company. The programmes of Metro Radio will be heard on 261 metres medium wave and also on 97 megahertz VHF, the same as for these test transmissions.
Hi there, this is Dave Gregory saying I hope you're going to join me every weekday evening on NBC at 6 o'clock for 75 minutes of the very latest and best from the world of pop.
Back then, the station couldn't quite make up its mind whether it was to be called Metro or the Metropolitan Broadcasting Company or NBC, but thankfully the programmes were very clear.
Hello, I'm James Whale, and I'd like to introduce you to the other announcers on Metro. And they are ladies first.
Hello, I'm Maggie Mash.
And also...
Hello, I'm Peter Raitt.
Join in with Metro!
Every Friday evening, Maggie has a programme that's called Woman's Weekly. Maggie, can you tell us more?
Well, Woman's Weekly is a programme specially for the woman who's been working during the week and hasn't been able to hear the afternoon programme. It will include interviews, live discussions in the studio, and other items of interest for women.
Thank you, Maggie. Also, every evening from 4 o'clock, there's a programme that's called Roundup. And Peter, I wonder if you could tell us all about that.
Yes, it's called Roundup because that's exactly what it is.
Ah, I get the idea, Peter. Thank you very much indeed. We're with you. How posh was James Whale on that? Ready for Metro's Day One, the station's theme was queued up and ready to go on the new reel-to-reel tape recorder. Or was it?
This is Metro Radio, 261 metres in the medium wave band, and 97 VHF. The time is 6 o'clock, and to officially open the station, here is the managing director, Mr. Bruce Lewis.
The launch of Metro in Newcastle this week in 1974. Happy 40th birthday, Metro.
We are now going on the air for the very first time, bringing independent radio to you who live in the Tyne and Wear areas. At this moment, you are witnessing the birth of a new radio station.
As Metro launched, the future of commercial radio was still very much in doubt. Let's take a look at an article in this week's Press Cuttings, 18th of July, 1974. The Times here reporting that cutbacks in independent local radio are likely, but the Independent Broadcasting Authority wants to license the remaining stations to take the network to 60. Back then, commercial stations were simulcasting, of course, the same programmes on the AM and FM dial, but one by one they launched the AM offspring.
It's 8:28 across West Yorkshire, and it's here. The all-time great music station, Magic 828. Ray Stroud, Peter Tate, Mike Bitty, Alex Hall, Johnny Moran, Noddy Holder, David Hamilton, and Roger Kirk.
Good morning, good morning.
Thank you, John Myers, on voiceover duty. Memories of this week in 1990 and Radio Air splitting its frequencies in Leeds and forming Air FM and Magic 828.
So that's the song that starts Magic 828. It's the Beatles and Magical Mystery Tour. We've just popped the champagne cork. The smell is delicious. And the boss is covered at the moment. We'll get him a towel in a second.
On Radio 2 this week, 2 years ago, a new audio identity. The first for 15 years. And a moment almost too exciting for Chris Evans.
And stand by for a brand new news jingle. I'm very excited. Are you ready? Whoa! This is Radio 2.
BBC News at 7 o'clock on Monday, the 16th of July. Good morning, this is Moira Stewart.
The new jingle package from Wise Buddha, complete with the logo licensed from Groove Addicts, aired on Radio 2 this week, 2 years ago. You only have one chance to get most links right, but some links matter a little more than others. This was a pretty important one from Richard Skinner, 29 years ago this week.
It's 12 noon in London, 7 a.m. in Philadelphia, and around the world it's time for Live Aid. Wembley welcomes their Royal Highnesses, the Prince and Princess of Wales.
Richard Skinner. Classic radio now, and it's back 75 years to a show my dad still talks about, and I never knew really what he was talking about until I heard this.
Contact! Stand clear! It's that man again!
It's that man again! It's that man again! It's the Tommy Hanley Field!
He may be a philological filibuster, but despite his passion for prevarication, this terminological inexactitudinarian still remains...
It was enough to amuse us 75 years ago. It's That Man Again, launching this week in 1939. It was a comedy series on the BBC, starring Tommy Handley, best known for the catchphrase...
Can I do your nails, sir?
Well, crack me on the cranium. If it isn't Mrs. Mott, the child with the bottomless bucket.
When Tommy died in 1949 from a brain hemorrhage very suddenly, too, it was quite a shock for a nation which had grown to love Tommy through the darkest days of war. And no less than the Bishop of London, John W.C. Wand, paid tribute.
From the highest to the lowest in the land, men and women of every station have found in his program an escape from their troubles and anxieties into the realm of whimsical nonsense.
How much radio meant back then. ITBAR launching this week in 1939. So, with the commercial radio sustaining service The Superstation launching this week 26 years ago...
The Superstation.
Gwyneth Williams appointed controller of Radio 4 years ago...
In fact, that's the thing about this job, that is, you know, you have a sort of intellectual understanding of how closely people guard and love the network... But it's a much more visceral thing when you get the job and you can see, you know, with a postbag.
Beacon launching in Shropshire 27 years ago.
The new Beacon radio service for Shropshire will bring you your own programmes.
And the ITA becoming the IBA this week 42 years ago.
The IBA is testing on these wavelengths.
Those are this week's radio moments. Radio.